Here is a time that we have put aside for some questions and answers in the little bowl that was out there. And she has the little bowl. Now, this is Monica. Come on up. Not only is she going to draw some questions from the bowl, but I want her to be involved in some of the answers because, remember, she is the archivist of the Cryon work. And I told you that. And so many times...
I'm his brain.
That's correct.
Not really.
many times I will turn to her and say, do you remember when or what happened or was there more? In case those questions come up where we need. And then, of course, if there's any questions on nodes and nulls and stuff, I'll pass that to her or the things that she's been working on.
So, first question. In my dreams, I am almost always someone else. Am I dreaming about past lives?
Normally, when that happens, there really truly is an Akashic, something Akashic going on. Akashic is past lives. It would be that which is, Cryon says, is soul-based instead of body-based, which means that you have it when you leave. Cryon actually says it's kept on the earth. And when you come back, you pick it up and put it in your body. And yes, so if you constantly are dreaming about this, it's more than just the hero's journey that is talked about. I believe very fully that it is part of a past life experience. Now, I have actually had this kind of thing in what I will call recurring dreams. You all have aware that these things will come and go and be so familiar, and you'll be either put back in this thing. For a long time, when I was a young man, I can remember having the same dream, which didn't relate to anything that I had gone through. And it was, every time it recurred, I questioned it in the morning and went, what is that? And why is that? And in each case, I was someone else. Now, what I realize now, and we haven't even discussed that, is the someone else that I was is who I am today. So I was getting inklings of the future. But remember retrocausality, and we discussed that? It's possible that we've come in not with contracts, with predispositions of perhaps what we're going to fulfill. Those of you who dream about better lives and joy and things of this nature can be like that. It's not necessarily something in the past, but something that is a potential. The Akash is not linear. That's the other thing that Cryon has said over and over. So a past life reader, for instance, is not going to read you years and dates and lives and as much as energy that you've experienced. And that is, if you're talking about energy and retrocausality, wow, you could be reading potentials, things that partially happened last time, but those are real dreams. So I love the interpretation of dreams because a dream interpreter will tell you what it means, and it usually is metaphoric for something very important in your life, and quite often it's quite positive. You're not doing your job. Get another question.
Well, I was contemplating whether to add something or not.
Sure, you can add something.
But dreams are fascinating, the whole subject of dreams, and Cryon has even spoken about the different layers of dreams with the biological reason and then the reorganizing the memories in the brain reason. But I also did a dental decoding program with Dr. Fabian Brotos, who talks about dreams as well. And his interpretation is that dreams, when you start looking at the clock, the dreams you have up until, I think he said it was around 3 a.m., are an up. He described it like this. It's an upload program into the cloud. And then when you wake up in those hours, 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., those morning hours, this is a download program from the cloud to you to resolve your conflicts in life. So that was... Everyone has a different way of working with dreams, and Michelle is trained in shamanism, and shamanism is all about symbology, and that's why Michelle says don't look at dictionaries, because your own personal symbology is personal to you, and when you start a dream journal, you get your own messages to yourself. But I just found the piece of the puzzle that Fabian had was very interesting. If you start thinking of dreams having an upload program and then a download program. So if, who knows, if you start paying attention to that now, you may start interpreting your dreams differently.
Well, I don't think we've ever had a dream question. So that's fascinating. I like it.
Yeah. Next question is, what can we do to assist the new and clearly evolved children that would be labelled as special needs that feel no need for verbal language?
This is tough. We're talking about autism mostly. There's very many. There's many layers of autism. There's functional, non-functional. But the ones that I think that question addresses is a question that Crine has discussed a little bit about. And he says that a fully autistic human being, it's almost like the linear connections in their brains are not there. And Crine went on to say, and they are not abnormal. They are an example of where you are going. And so what he meant by that was that you speak in linear ways and they don't. They react to our linearity, and it's extremely frustrating. They don't want to put words in a row. They react to being touched. It's very, very 3D. And so you may be looking at a savant. You may be looking at the future. How to treat them, that is so, I haven't spent time with autistic, and especially the children. My heart goes out to those who have, especially if you have one. It's tough. And what Crine has said, that they respond to love, and they respond in a way that is not just, say, love them. It says there is response. In other words, if you start working with care and love and these things, they come around, and actually you can learn their language eventually, the language of intuition, perhaps, the language of emotions, perhaps, that is not linear at all. How do we communicate in a non-linear way? I don't know, but I think it's coming. It's not really an answer of what to do except to love them and to work in, to work the puzzle perhaps differently, but you're looking at the difference between us and them being, we are linear and they are not. And the idea that that may be the future you're looking at, it may be evolution. That may be the next consciousness step, a gradual dropping of that which is linear so that we can start working with the multidimensional brains that we have.
I think that's a beautiful answer, love. And when you look at a human as though they are whole, instead of us looking at someone who is broken, there is no broken in any human. That, and that's what I think your whole essence of your answer was.
Well, when I talk to the parents too, and I say, when is it peaceful for you? When is there no problems? You know, when are the frustrations at the lowest? And almost all of them have said, late at night, not when we're sleeping, but when we are just looking at one another and we're quiet. And I say, well, there may be a way to start there and see if we can learn from them.
Mm. Next question is that after one lifetime in Lemuria, who was in other places to have the next life? And then there's a question about time babies.
You know, the whole Lemurian puzzle, if you want to say, is explained in the Women of Lemuria book as far as what happened and the timing. And it's filled with minutiae that Crine has given of how all of that worked. So it's tough to give us a soundbite to tell you, you know, what that is. But basically, if I could say, number one, the Pleiadians, according to Crine, landed in many places, probably most of the nodes. And that Lemuria was special only because it was totally and completely isolated. And that created a phenomenon in the isolation that may not have happened on the other nodes, and that is you got one lifetime in Lemuria, and then when you reincarnated, it was anywhere else on the planet. Anywhere else meaning somewhere else. We don't know where. But you only had the one lifetime in Lemuria, and then the next time it would be starting to populate the planet, basically with the knowledge in your Akash that you were taught. The core knowledge was like given to you, and then you were released. He doesn't talk much about the other nodes and what might have happened in the other nodes, But you get the impression that because they were not isolated, that you would reincarnate and maybe even try to get back to the node. It's tough to know. These are not necessarily minutiae items that we are fully aware of, except that one that is so fascinating is that you only have one life in Lemuria. Now, the thing that is to put it into a whole nother bag of, if you want to say, of confusion, is the star, is the whole idea of the sisterhood. Krein has now given almost 100 channels there. And what he talks about is how they may not have ever known each other, because in the thousands of years that they spent that one lifetime learning, they had no concept of one another. They might not recognize each other. The Akash is not working for them to recognize each other, except they will all remember being there as though they were together. Because the teaching there was so, I would say, sacred and so pure that it sticks. And then we come to Myrtle. Yet again, co-founder of this place. 1800s, did it stick so much that she opened her Akash and out came everything she'd ever learned in such a pristine way that it's so pure. It's almost like she came right from Lemuria, came here, opened that bag that she learned, and then plopped it right in front of everybody and said, this is the way to do it. I love that. Some things are there in our Akash, no matter how many lifetimes we've had or where we went, that will always be there. And I think that is kind of what we're getting at here. It doesn't really matter where we went or how it worked, and the minutiae is not all that important. A lot of people like to have it. But that it's imprinted so grandly that when it's time to pop out, it starts being remembered. That's what the sisterhood is about. Women who are starting to remember their shamanism, the things that they were taught, their power, the core truths, what to do with them. And that's not the women's movement. It's not to demonstrate. It's to start using it in a way that's going to help their families, each other, and eventually the planet. And that's what the classes are all about.
Okay, next question is, I understand we are basically in three dimensions. Are we making progress toward the fifth dimension?
Oh boy, I love this one. Did you get that one? We're in 3D. Are we making progress toward the next one? What is the next one? Okay, you can't say four. We were in three until Einstein came along. And he said, oops, time is four. Well, now we're into five. There is a fallacy here for you to recognize. Number one, multidimensionality is not 3D. We are in four of the multitudes, and so our perception is what we call ourselves. We say we are in 4D. We say three, but we are in 4D. The reality, we are all sitting in all of the dimensions and always have been. Consciousness then creates awareness. And so Krein has said, when you see those who can then do these things and have the gifts and all that's there, or have whatever the special stuff, they are already working in a multidimensionality. And they are then using those things. And they're yours too. Why don't you then, Krein says, and, you know, get with it. What has been presented so many times is that the evolution of consciousness truly is opening ourselves to the multidimensionality that we already have. And that now, in this time, there are tools, things are happening, the nodes and the nulls, that give allowance for this. And the thing that I always look at is the humanism of change often gets in the way, even for an old soul who now is starting to perceive things they never could before, awarenesses, some of them shut it down. Are you aware of that? Because it is simply too frightening. And there's change. And there's the idea that they're now broken because they can do these things, or they don't tell anybody about it. And that is also very, or we say, it's human nature at the point where we're measuring human nature right now to be frightened of these changes, especially when they've never occurred before. Where I sit in front of old souls, and I'll tell you, when I am in the hallway or other places and we're doing these things in meetings and meetings, I get all kinds of questions, and sometimes people will take me aside and tell me what's going on, and they're scared spitless that they're seeing stuff. And I'm saying, welcome to who you are. Don't let it frighten you, because you're becoming a whole person. What if we're all supposed to see stuff in a way that's not frightening? Seeing stuff that helps us along our way. Seeing or having intuitions, for instance, that we never had before. Now, tomorrow, for instance, in this room we have Marilyn and Joy, and they're teaching channeling. You might not see the connection here, but what they're really teaching you is how to get in touch with what you already have that you do not acknowledge, which is fantastic intuitive powers. Those intuitive powers are ones that connect to your innate, they connect to your heart, they connect to your pineal, they connect to the other side of the veil, and you get stuff that you don't know that you had through an enhanced intuition. And why don't more people do that is because we're trained we can't. And so tomorrow is a study, not necessarily of how to channel, but how to use intuition in such a way that channeling then occurs. Do I have that right, girls?
That's exactly right.
All right. And so it becomes a fun exercise. How do you get out of yourself? How do you break the barrier? And sometimes that's through fun and joy, the plurk shop whole idea, work and play. And I hope I'm not giving away the process, but the process truly is getting to a place where you are open enough to then start to understand there's more. And then be in a position where you can then practice it right away, that very moment. Crian has a whole channel in joy, and he says this has an energy of health and abundance and forgiveness. It says, if you can be joyful, almost all the ugly stuff is gone at that moment. When you can laugh, all the ugly stuff is gone at that moment. Don't you feel this way? Have you ever been depressed and when they watched a funny movie or something and came out of it and went, oh, that was so refreshing, I feel so much better now. You just got a healing that you gave yourself. So this is kind of the long answer to that one. Did I answer it?
Yes, you did, and now I have a long question.
Okay, what was did I really answer it? Was there more that I should?
It was about getting into 5D.
I like
out
that.
Of 3D, so
okay.
Yes, very complete answer.
Okay, oh, there's one more thing.
Oh,
okay.
Tell us.
Okay, when you're in 3D, you can count in a linear fashion. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that's linear. You got it? Okay, when you get out of 3D, you're not linear anymore, so counting becomes just one of the things you can do or used to do. Here's where I'm going. There is no such thing as 5D. It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, all. Now, if you understand that logic, it doesn't matter. You can still say you're moving into 5D and everybody understands you're going to the next level. But I'm a nerd, remember?
So next question is, Carl Mollison says he channels the Creator. Recently he said that Creator is going to destroy human life and start all over again if humans don't change the evil initiates and fallen angels through prayer. He said they have no souls, so that is why they enjoy taunting us and causing humans to do bad things. Is this true?
No, not from my standpoint at all. It is not true. It is not true from any moment that I ever had for 31 years with a loving entity that says you are a child of God and we love you beyond measure, and what happens to this planet is up to you. And also then through the time that I've been channeling, the idea of a punishing God and one who will send you into hell and torture you and your children forever. Crian has said over and over, that is a dysfunctional God. That's not the Creator. That's a God that you made up. That is your dad, by the way. So God then becomes a dysfunctional father, which is totally against all of the logic we would have of who the Creator is. The Creator is not a human being. The Creator's consciousness is not human. So to then say the Creator has decided that you didn't do a good job and that you're going to be punished and that you're going to be wiped out and you're going to start again is out of a fiction that has been created because we've been trained into it. And can I say it? I'm very, very sorry to say it, and I shouldn't say it because too many are listening. But that is the basis of so much of the doctrine of the planet, a punishing God who is looking at whether you're good or bad. Do you realize that's Santa Claus? That is the children's story that Christ said we have been given. And now it's time for the adult story. You are magnificent because you are a piece of God. You have the Creator inside. You should know better than to believe for a moment that the Creator, that source from which you are part of, would ever, ever give anything but love to you. Is that okay to say? Thank you.
How close is full disclosure?
You want to define full disclosure? It has many. It would have many definitions. Let's just go with the simplest one. When are we going to turn on the lights when everybody can realize what's going on, and especially what's been hidden from us? So, I'm at the United Nations in 1997. I believe was the first trip, and I'm there for the first time, and I'm very frightened. I'd never been to New York before. Invited there now to Channel 7 times. This was my first time. I had never been east of here, actually, Midwest. And I was about ready to, as a California young man at that time, going to New York City. And of course, all I had was the movies to decide what New York City was going to be like. And I was sure I'd be mugged as soon as I got off the airplane. Then I met people, by the way, in the East Coast afterward, who didn't want to come to California because they were afraid the Indians would get them. So, you know, we're a product of our movies and all of these things. I'm in New York, not feeling comfortable. By the way, that's changed. I love New York now. Not feeling comfortable. Everything is new. And I'm about ready to channel. And I'm taken into the United Nations and put into Committee Room 6. Now, the channeling is done for delegates and guests, not... You can't buy a ticket. And so in that place, there were delegates, and I'm looking around. I am out of my element completely. I just not, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm just not there. And Kryon starts to channel. And you can hear this. It's on my website. And he says two things. Not immediately, but within the channels. The channels were not that long. And the two things were this. Number one, there should be an non-voting indigenous council of wisdom at the United Nations. And that was something that was actually tried later by those who had heard this. They couldn't get it together, and this is also human nature, because the indigenous they had selected wouldn't work with each other. Sorry, it's just the way it is. But it was actually tried. The idea is this, that the ancients have wisdom that we don't have today. They don't need to vote, which means you don't have to have the politics involved, but at least they should have a voice in what to do. Absolutely, that makes so much sense. The second thing, and I'll never forget it, governments, tell the people what you know about the ETs. That was the second one. So you know that there is stuff hiding, much. One of the biggest questions, and this has not been anything that has been brought up, but it's something I teach. People would ask this, they say, if the galaxy is teeming with life, if they're out there, why haven't we met them? Pretty good question. There's actually something called the Fermi paradox, named after Enrico Fermi, where it was in 2018, where they actually had come to the decision, wise men had come to the decision, that there's nobody out there, because we would have met them by now. it's the same thing. So here's what Kryon says. You are the new kids on the block. you are immature, and you're not going to have anybody land on the White House lawn and say hello until you won't destroy them. You're too dangerous. How about that? What would happen right now if that was done? If we had somebody come and land on the White House lawn? Obliteration. You know this is true. We are dangerous. We are kids with toys. That's why they're not here. Not the mature ones. Not the ones. And also, Crying says, we are protected from the riffraff. Means there's a lot out there that would come and want to do other things to us and have never been able to. So there's a lot there to know. I guess that for a long, long time now, the indigenous saw them. The indigenous saw them. We went to Lake Titicaca. This is very well known for this. And of course, Michelle has been there, has studied the portals. But we will ask them, you know, have you seen any UFOs? And they look at you like you're nuts. Like say, you know, well, yeah, the runway's right over there. Of course we have. This is the kind of answers we get in these places where, yeah, for hundreds and hundreds of years. And what Grian was saying, maybe it's time you knew you weren't alone. Full disclosure will happen at the right time when we have the maturity and the consciousness that we won't destroy them.
What is the purpose of COVID-19 experience?
You know, that was actually answered a couple of times, yesterday and today in the channel. The purpose was to bring us to a point that we could not have been to otherwise, to get us to change certain things that would never have changed. Do you understand? Is that a double negative? Things are happening here that will absolutely change the way we deliver our news, what the realization of a lot of people have. It's part of what was just on the screen with Michelle. And she brought it to this point. I mean, there's going to be things that are going to crawl out of the woodwork that are going to be too scary to see. And you're going to say, well, the world's coming to an end because of that. And then they'll say, oh, no, excuse me, that's always been there. We just didn't know about it. Those are the things that are going to start coming out of the woodwork because of COVID-19. We're going to see this explosion that's happened to children. You remember two things that Crian has predicted? Two of the biggest things that he's predicted are not necessarily here yet, but almost, and you can feel them, and they're coming. One was the exposure of sexual slavery of children. And Crian says it's bigger, and you had no idea. It's huge, and you have no idea. Michelle has mentioned it. I have mentioned it. When we travel, we see pictures in the airports. You know, have you seen this child? Have you seen? You don't see this here. We have perhaps it's still here, but it's just not as open. And so it's all over the world. They're actually, I have a hard time talking about this, but can you imagine farming, young farming, having a birth farm where you would give birth to the young girls and they'd come to an age and be used and sold. They were born for that. And then they're used by date, probably 17, and they would disappear. And you think that I am projecting that? No, because there are women who have escaped from those farms and are starting to talk. Can you imagine something like this? Crian says, where does the funding come from for that horror? And Crian says, you won't believe it. And you, when you see it, and I don't know what that necessarily means, but it might be from our leaders, it might be from the most respected people who have money on the planet, I don't know. But here it comes. That is what I'm looking forward to. Here it comes. COVID is going to push the envelope on that one. The other one was the fall of inappropriate big pharma. Those who keep us sick for money and know there are cures and they put them in the drawer. Unconscionable, in my opinion. That's going to be revealed. And it might be, Crian says, it could be a movie. It could be something else. And it's coming. I think COVID is going to push the envelope for that as well. The astrology we're seeing, the things that are coming in our face, are going to stir the pot. So I think those that's the reason right now. Meanwhile, you and I get through this with benevolence, compassion, kindness. There's energy in those things that are going to save our lives.
How do you stay positive around negative people that you have to interact with? And the example is the working environment.
You know, you can't get away from a working environment. You lose your job. I mean, the idea that you can just cast them away and get another job is not practical. It isn't. And so Crine has said many times, don't be unequally yoked. It says, meaning if you have friends or family or whatever, don't let them influence you to the place where they're going to drag you down. It's better than to remove yourself than to have that. But when you're at work, you've got another puzzle. You have somebody coming in that's always negative, or there's always gossip, and you see everything they say is a downer, as they say. Getting through that one is not as easy, but I'll tell you, I think even Marilyn and Joy would teach a class on that one. There are ways of staying positive in the midst of negativity. We have those tools, folks, and it doesn't mean running away from the other people. You can sit in it and not have it affect you, and what you say back in kindness and that doesn't then enforce what they have, pretty soon they realize, number one, you're not listening and you're not on board with what they're doing. So some of them just don't talk to you anymore. Or some of them will come to you and say, what have you got? I want to know what are you thinking? Because you seem to be like not as disturbed as I am. I'm in trouble. And they'll admit it. I'm negative. I'm in trouble. I don't like this world. I don't like myself. I don't like anything. And pretty soon you'll be saying, well, let's talk. What do? Kindness, benevolence. You think differently. We have ways of getting through this. I'm thinking of those right now in this room who work at Silent Unity. You got one there? Who else works at Silent? Okay. Imagine what they have to go through. 24 hours a day. You have 24 hours a day with prayer requests, and also they all, not all of them, many of them come in person. So you got a phone call and you hear it all. You hear some of the worst stuff you've ever heard, and you listen and you listen and you listen. And how many hours of that can you take? And the answer that they would give is bring it on, because they know how to shield themselves with benevolence and kindness and love. And it's almost like that is the tool that is used. They're doing it. So it's even worse than being at work with somebody who's negative, because they have to have the brunt of all of this. You're warriors of the light, girls. Thank you for what you do here.
Next question, is creativity a function of the divine spirit?
It really is. Creativity is absolutely a function of the divine spirit. The most creatives we have. I spent my life with creatives. Before I got into Crayon, I had a recording studio for 15 years, and all I did was work with composers. And that's where I learned so much about the humans, I fell in love with all of them almost, because they all had the same attribute. It's that the creative seem to ooze these things that we all want so badly. Painters and all. There's a frustration level too in a lot of them, because they are creatives. Sometimes they're not linear. And then here we go with the linearity of having to be in a family that keeps telling them to get a job and not be creative. And you want to be a painter? Get a job. Come on, forget it. You want to be a poet? Forget it. That's frustrating. That's another story. But boy, the creatives, I absolutely feel that the ones who are so creative are touching the face of God when they paint, when they compose. I've seen things in my studio I could not ever believe, and it was channeled, absolutely channeled. We were in a movie, doing a movie one time. We get these cues, which are just pieces of film, where composers have seen them, and they have the orchestra ready, and then we do the compositions for the cues, and that becomes the movie's music. This was a long, long time ago. And one of them was forgotten, and we have the composer there. He has the orchestra there. And you have, in order to get anything for the orchestra to play it, there's arrangers that have to, and transcribers that have to, are involved in writing the music and getting it out to the podiums and all. long story, if you don't understand music, it's a little more than you think. And one of the cues was forgotten, and here comes this piece of film, and he'd written nothing. And it was an important piece because it was a romantic thing. We looked at the film, and it was just two people reacting, and didn't think anything of it. And those cues that we see are there in black and white. They got pencil stripes through them, so it's not very elegant. And he said, "Let's give the orchestra a break." So he took a typical break is 10 minutes. He took 5 minutes and scribbled something down and handed it to those who do the transcriptions of the various keys and the music. The musicians have to play in because they're all written in different staves. And so we came back from lunch, and we recorded the cue, and we watched the film clip that we had been given. I can't tell you my reaction to this. Out of this guy in 5 minutes came the most beautiful melody and the most wonderful sonorities that the violins were playing and all of these things. And I realized at that moment, I just saw pure channeling. You ask him, where does that come from? And he says, oh, I've always been able to do that. And you realize, I'm looking at a channeler. That's creative. If you've seen the ones who can paint and sing and all the things that and poetry, they're so beautiful, absolutely linked to the divine soul. Usually old souls, by the way, are the ones that are most creative.
And I actually think every person has creativity abilities. I don't want to limit it to just musicians, artists, painters, sculptors. There's so many forms of creativity. And while the question said, is it a function of the divine spirit, I want to take it one step further to ask Lee, what are the things that block creativity and what are the things that enhance creativity?
Well, you can name them. Crine has his 10 channels with them. Fear makes them go away. Absolutely puts them on the floor. You just don't have any creativity. It's all gone. The derivatives of fear, anxiety, negativity, you know, make a list. It's not that hard, is it? And it steps on creativity. You can ask somebody who is creative when they're in trouble, what happens? Or if they have some fear, what happens? And they it all goes away. That ought to tell you, you know, where it comes from. Last question.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I've been seeing repeating numbers since 2007. Can you tell us anything about that?
You're not alone. Numbers are a language. And there are so many systems of numerology on the planet because it was recognized as a language. In other words, they mean things. Michelle uses the Chaldean. I have taught the Tibetan. And they're different. But the key is this, is that numbers are a language. And when you start putting them together with other numbers, they mean more things and other things. It's a language, and it's fascinating. It was
Pythagoras,
thank you, that was so enamored with numerology, he became a numerologist, this Pythagoras. That got me interested, by the way, because I thought, wow, this guy was not weird. Because he was logic like me, you know, in the early days. Now, of course, I'm not logic, but I'm woo-woo. Everybody knows that. Seeing numbers on a regular basis, I want you to write them down. What are they? Many of them, people say, are master numbers. And this is where, not Monica, you're Monica. I'll get this straight. This is Marilyn over there. You both have M names. I get confused. Marilyn is part of this and has and Marilyn actually together do a double digit every single month, and where they talk about the numbers and what they mean for that day and things like that. So this, again, I'm just doing is exposing you, if you haven't heard it before, numbers are a language, a real language that is not being really truly acknowledged. But it's ancient. It's very ancient. And the farther back you go, you realize that the ancients knew, and they had their systems, and that's what we're looking at today. So write them down. And then, if you really don't understand what you're seeing, probably you're going to see the same numbers over and over. There's a pattern, and the numbers are trying to tell you something. You know, get off your butt and do something. You know, like that. You know, just little messages. Great. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to say do something. Okay. What are we doing? What does it say we're doing now?
We have Amber.
Oh, wonderful. Dr. Wolf. Okay, yeah. And then we have a break after Dr. Wolf.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for your questions.